for an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Confederations Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Confederation Cup Football Daily today. Zach attacks, Prandelli counters in Italy-Japan's 7-goal thriller. We relive the Zaccaroni-Macaroni showdown and that Brazil-Mexico game. Call it Finding Neymar as the Seleção's big fish rules in their pool. Also on the way, Andy Carroll, PSG, post junk in the trunk and Thursday's impending drama, Nigeria-Uruguay and Spain-Tahiti in today's Confederation Cup Football Daily. Well, all of that and much, much more actually coming up in today's Confederation Cup Football Daily with Jacob Steinberg, who's already gazing wistfully at the exit. Jacob, good morning.
Just like James Gandolfini.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's just take a moment with that.
I know. I said I was disappointed before and you said that wasn't enough, so now I'm gutted.
You can't be. I don't think Five disappointed about someone's death.
All right, I'm upset.
You could be upset.
Shocked.
Or you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shocked. Or you could be. Yeah.
But you don't care.
Disappointed. No, it's not that I don't care. But I've never seen The Sopranos. There, I said it. I've never seen The Sopranos.
You've got it to look forward to, then. You should watch it.
Feel jealous.
Watch it through all
absolutely.
The way.
Now, his death has inspired me to watch The Sopranos so that his passing won't be completely...
Well,
the man who wasn't there, did you see that?
I did see that. You mean the Coen Brothers film?
Yeah.
I've seen him in other things. I also saw him in The Thick of It, which I hugely enjoyed.
In The Loop, I beg your pardon.
Right. No, he was...
But as Tony Soprano, he essentially kind of... You know, gave birth to the box set culture with The Sopranos. All these box sets that everyone's watching now are largely down to the fact that The Sopranos was so successful, I think.
Right. Greg Bukowski, great to have you on board.
Oh, yeah. Hi, James.
Hello. And Filippo Clare.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno to you, too. Yeah, you could just see your brain. A little bit like that scene in The Terminator, where his brain goes through all the different options. Luckily, you went up for a slightly cleaner one than Arnie chose that day. Right. Okay, so much to discuss today, both in the Confederations Cup and outside of it. But we may as well begin with Wednesday's late-night shocker in Recife between Italy and Japan. Absolutely extraordinary. Who stayed up right to the end of this one? Way, Philippe, you and me. You and me, buddy.
Not you guys.
Fell asleep.
Oh, fell asleep.
Very early start this morning.
I've been playing football.
What was the score when you fell asleep?
2-1 to Japan.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. But I kind of thought that Italy were going to win from there.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you? What made you think that?
Just the way they come back in that last 15 minutes of the first half.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay, well, it wasn't. It could have gone either way. Could have gone either way.
Yeah, perhaps Japan's way, actually, more than Italy's way.
Well, a lot of people, the Italy squad this morning. I mean, here's a quote, a tweet from Mario Balotelli. Japan, congratulations, great match, amazing team. And most of the players are saying, that they deserve to win. But I think Italy deserve a little bit of respect for the heart and the spirit that they showed. Not always attributes that you would attribute that team.
Under Prandelli's?
Oh, under Prandelli, they've been better.
Yes.
But what hasn't been better, he's been all about the possession football, but that went completely to pieces in this match.
Were you surprised by the changes that he made from the first game, in which they were absolutely superb?
Well, I think that there was a feeling...
Like Maggio coming in, for example.
There was a feeling that they would... Maggio came in, Aquilani came in.
Yeah.
And I think the idea was that it was to try and favour the possession because they didn't want to have to work too hard in this game. There were a lot of questions posed about their conditioning, about their fitness. Mm. When they arrived in Brazil, the 2-2 draw with Haiti, and having played the game against Mexico and then this game shortly after in very humid conditions, I think that there were one or two doubts there.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's good that Prandelli then took steps to rectify things.
Which, by the way, might be an element to take in consideration when we evaluate Japan's performance, which was quite magnificent at times, is the fact that even though most of those players now play in major European leagues, a number of them, they obviously come from the J-League to start with, where you do play in these conditions an awful lot of the time.
Right. They had an extra day. I don't know if that makes a difference. Greg, does that make a difference?
Yeah. Yeah, it would make a difference. Yeah, of course it would.
But they were also really, really good, Japan.
Oh, they were wonderful.
Mm. Shinji Kagawa.
Yeah.
Of course, he's quite fresh because he's barely played this season.
It's like also Keisuke Honda. I haven't seen him play like that, I mean, for his club, certainly for quite a while.
He's a player who's struggled with injury quite a lot, though, hasn't he, over the last 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
He's always been tipped for another big move or
well,
something.
He looked,
and then injury is
last night, he certainly looked like he could get a very, very big move indeed. It's the speed, the tempo of their game was was extraordinary. At times, I mean, you were hallucinating. It's one thing, actually, I don't know if you share
an
opinion.
I wasn't, but...
You were not? No. What a pity. There's one thing, I mean, from the start of this competition, you know, we've got used to, I wouldn't say this, but to a view international competitions, World Cup, Euros and so forth, and say, well, it's not quite as good as the Champions League. Mm. The rhythm, the tempo is not the same. This Confederations Cup, the tempo of the game has been extraordinarily high.
Yeah,
extraordinarily high. And this one was, I mean, thanks to the Japanese. I mean, they were playing... It's not new. It's something that's always been in the so-called Japanese football DNA, the fact of always playing first touch and very quickly, always looking forward to overlap. I mean, it's probably the Zaccheroni touch as well there. And but they were tremendous. And it's funny because they're out of the competition, but they will have, I think, strengthened the point of view of many people who think that they're going to be a real force.
Mm. Well, you were excited about the prospect of them at the World Cup, Jacob.
I said they were going to be the hipster's choice at the World Cup.
Yeah.
Because Belgium are too mainstream.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Already?
Yeah.
Was it Italy's third goal? It was a really, really good goal.
Italy's third, if I'm not mistaken, was the one where Giaccherini manages to chase a ball that looked like it was going out, puts it across, and then it's an own goal.
The second goal was brilliant. The ball played through from
De Rossi. That was the fourth goal, actually.
Fourth one. Okay.
Yeah.
I've watched the highlights.
Sorry, the fourth goal was the Balotelli penalty. And shocking refereeing, though, because two more silly penalties, you'd be hard-pressed to find.
Didn't you enjoy Buffon's reaction to giving away that penalty, the waving arms and the aghast face? It wasn't a penalty, but still, I think it was worth being given just for his response to it.
But a great through ball from De Rossi, though.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Precision, absolute precision. Yeah. And then, Philip, you might be interested in this. I stayed, when I went on my honeymoon in Japan, with Honda's godfather.
Ooh.
You happened to be be renting out a room in this house that me and Anna stayed in, and his godfather's French. You know that? Yeah, and there's pictures
of
him.
I had no idea.
All around the house, his pictures of him Honda coming round with the to visit them and stuff. Yeah, and at the time he had this tip for me. He said Honda's going to go to Liverpool. He said he really wants to go to Liverpool, and he never went to Liverpool. So.
Why I'll make a note of that. That's interesting facts.
Yeah,
they
should go and I could get his name for you.
Based on what they took to Cole instead. Yeah.
Steeped in Japanese culture, this Frenchman is.
Mm. Good, lovely stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Andrea Pirlo is 35.
Yeah,
which I think
he looked it yesterday.
Yeah, I think there are players who can be fresh at the end of a season in humid conditions. I suspect he might not be one of them. So it's going to be interesting to see how Italy. cope in their next game.
But the Japanese had done what many teams don't manage to do against Italy, which is basically to have two players who are hounding Pirlo all over the pitch, a sort of kind of, I think it's called gegenpressing, but with the target being Andrea Pirlo.
What's it called?
Gegenpressing?
Gegenpressing.
Yeah, with the idea that you overload a particular area or you overload a zone in which a player is operating.
Right.
What's which is gegen? Very popular in Germany.
Oh, right. Oh, it's
gegen a German thing, yeah.
All right. Do you know what it means?
Well, gegen is against. So you're really identifying a target or a zone and you're overloading it.
Buzzword ahoy, gegenpressing.
So is that, if you overload that area, is that like a Lee Catamol sending off or something?
Yeah.
Too much gegenpressing and there's an explosion and a red card.
Something like that.
I was quite impressed with Balotelli as well, particularly in the first half, because he was the only Italy player who was actually able to do anything against Japan. He was still strong and quick and skillful, and he was giving them problems, even though he was getting the ball not very often at all.
Composed, intelligent.
Yeah, well, there was a moment in the first half where I think they'd just fallen behind the penalty, and he looked like he got clipped in the box and he fell down and the referee didn't do anything. And then he sort of handled the ball as he was on the floor and the referee gave a free kick. And you thought, is he given a penalty, given a free kick to Japan? And you thought maybe, Balotelli a few months ago would have thrown a little tantrum, but he just sort of got on with it. And I don't know if maybe he's, something's clicked with him there.
All right. I prefer his hair this way as well. I don't know how you...
Sensible.
Yeah, it's a kind of old-fashioned.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
It's Prandelli. I mean, obviously, he's got the key to the player and to the man.
Well, next up for Italy, it's going to be Brazil, which is going to be an entertaining game. Although Brazil bit disappointing in the match against Mexico, especially because they started it so brightly.
Yeah, it was a strange match. The first 15, 20 minutes, they went off at such a pace. It just looked like they were going to overwhelm Mexico. They scored a really good goal. Neymar was a fantastic volley. I think Alves played the crossover initially. But yeah, they just, after that 15 or 20 minutes, I don't know if they actually wilted in the heat or whether Mexico got a grip in the game, but they just... Nothing seemed to happen for the...
Commentator was pointing out repeatedly, actually, that Mexico was standing off Brazil. And I thought, well, yeah, that's what they do. They're Mexico. That's, standoff is in their DNA, surely. But then they kind of woke up and...
And I think, like, the key to how Brazil play is it's all... I think a lot of it's to do with the fullbacks in that, you know, Marcelo and Alves just... They push on so far forward that they can overwhelm teams. And it takes a team... a while to understand how to play against Brazil because they, you know, they have to alter the way they set themselves up to almost to kind of cancel out their attacking qualities.
Because Scolari afterwards was saying we were lost for 15, 20 minutes. We have problems down one flank that we'll need to resolve. Which flank did he mean? Because I thought the other one with Neymar could have been.
He probably had problems down both flanks when they pushed on so far that then Mexico managed to get behind them. But Mexico's big problem is they've just got no one who can score any goals. I think they've drawn 9 games out of the last 12. Mm. They're struggling to qualify for the World Cup, and I mean, Hernandez is a poacher when he plays for United, but he needs somebody to play off, and Mexico haven't got a player who he can play off. They've got a very good forward in Carlos Vela who isn't playing because he's still, I mean, it's 2 years now since there was this, you know, incident in which he was kind of told that he organised a party at a hotel in which there were some special night friends that came round, and he denies that he had anything to do with this organisation, and he was banned for 6 months and he just refuses to play for the national team. And they really need to get, you know, to put that behind him now. They've got a year till the World Cup. They might not even be there. They need to get him back in the team because although he's not like a big man who can hold the ball up, he's a player who can create a chance out of nothing. And he's, you know, and he can give them something up front, which they're lacking at the moment.
Didn't West Ham have a Mexican striker, Jacob?
Yeah, Guillermo Franco.
There you go.
And Barrera came on.
Barrera.
Yeah. Who does he play for now?
I don't know, but he came on last night and put a good cross in. And that was,
well done to him.
Yeah, I don't know if he did that for West Ham in his six games.
He went past two players. Superb dribbling skills on the right wing. Mm. And a very good cross to finish it off. Mm. There you go.
And the Mexico defended it really well, you know, put Brazil back on the attack.
Dos Santos has been looking quite lively in his Ronaldinho tribute headband.
As he generally does with the national team. I mean, remember him in the 2010 World Cup, he was very, very good then.
I love his football boots as well. He's just got plain black football boots. There's nothing on them. It's as if he's coloured them in with a marker pen.
There's a bit of a theme there developing. I mean, Balotelli's haircut, you know,
retro.
Giovanni's boots. So, yeah. Is it hip to be reactionary?
I think it might be. It might well be. What about Neymar, though?
I'm not his greatest fan, so perhaps I should leave.
Why? But even in this Confederations Cup?
Yes, I mean, he's shown, I mean, extraordinary skills, which we are all aware of, because everybody knows Neymar through YouTube, I think, more or less, which is one thing which really irritates me. But there you go. We've seen him now, you know. I mean, it's the Confederations Cup. I mean, people are saying he's arrived now as a major talent. He's signing for Barcelona for all this money. Okay, all right. Let's wait a bit. He's got phenomenal talent. I mean, some of the things he did, especially on Joe's goal, that was absolutely extraordinary.
So why are you not a major fan then?
It's more a question of the attitude. It's the question that he's got an awful, awful lot to learn. And one of the problems of Brazil had yesterday was the fact that he did absolutely no cover work on his flank. None whatsoever.
I thought the problem was his cover work. He can continue to give away fouls and stuff.
He threw in like five Pulse goals challenges on the bounce.
But that's is that a decent contribution to the defensive effort?
He's not at his finest in that phase of the game, I'd agree.
Exactly.
You're just so happy that he's on the field for Brazil, are you not?
Which is why I said, you know, I would rather leave it to others.
All right. Jacob, you a fan? Neymar?
I've not really seen him enough to... I've only full game I've seen him play was when he wasn't very good against England, so obviously I've made my mind up based on...
Did you not see the Mexico game?
No, I was playing football.
All right, then.
Yeah, no, I was impressed by Neymar in that match last night for what I saw. And but, you know, Philippe's, you know, referred to the fact that he seems like he's very much about him, about Neymar and the self, and he's got great skills, but... it'd be interesting to see how he develops and whether he can fit into a team like Barcelona and function not as the kingpin, which when he plays for Brazil and when he has played at club level in Brazil, he has been the main player, you know.
No, I mean, okay, everybody talks about him logically because of the quality of the two goals he scored, but I think one of the players who really is now asserting himself as a really huge presence is Paulinho. Mm. And every game, I mean, against England, when Brazil were very poor, he was very, very impressive that night, and since then, my gosh. And all the talk you hear is about Neymar, it's not about Paulinho, who is, I think, a more complete footballer.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where he ends up, Paulinho, because there's a lot of interest in his services. I was impressed, though, by Neymar coming out and saying, I also want a fairer, safer and more honest Brazil. I'll walk onto the pitch against Mexico, inspired by the protests that have been going on in that country.
That might have been prompted by the fact that people saying that a doctor was worth more than Neymar in Brazil.
Right.
But he's come out. But this being said, most of the Brazilian footballers have come out. I mean, David Luiz did. Hmm. Hulk was actually quite eloquent about it, and which is quite strange when you think of the demonstrations that have taken place, will also take place today. Hmm. Demonstrations throughout the world. There was one in Dublin. There was one in London as well. Hmm. And people who, on one hand, are demonstrating in their Seleção shirts, but saying the World Cup is nonsense. Hmm. So it's a pretty strong message, isn't it?
There's more to Hulk than meets the eye, of course, particularly if you're seeing him from in front.
That's already a lot. Yes.
I was just going to say, if more of this, you know, these protests were directed at FIFA as well, it'd be helpful, given that they're going to stand to pocket so much money from, they're going to go walk into Brazil, take away millions of pounds and take it out of Brazil,
right,
and go thank you very much and just leave all this
but
big mess
protests against them. FIFA, how are they going to work?
Well, no, I just mean, you know, they seem,
the only thing you can do really is boycott the next World Cup.
Yeah, well, yeah, I suppose you're right. I just mean, like, you know, it seems like FIFA are kind of quietly just kind of standing away from all this whilst it's going on, and you know, and
or telling everyone to shut up and be respectful.
You're right. Yeah.
Well, let's now hear from John Cotterill, who's in Sao Paulo. John Cotterill, who may be known to viewers of Brazilian league football overseas, as one of the commentators for TV Globo. John, how have you been enjoying Brazil in this Confederations Cup so far?
Well, hello. It's been, it's been job done, mission accomplished so far for Brazil. No great shakes, that's a general opinion here. It wasn't a fabulous performance, but Brazil are through into the next phase of the competition.
Mm. One or two issues, but particularly the fact that if David Luiz is your defensive rock, then you might have one or two question marks at the back.
David Luiz, Paulinho, they are doubtful for Saturday's game against Italy. David Luiz, it's strange because the perceptions here at Brazil of certain players are very different from what they are in Europe, and they go through phases. Over a year ago, David Luiz was not rated by many Brazilians here in Brazil. And now that current phase is that Hulk isn't really rated, and they prefer Lucas Moura. So it depends, it swings and roundabouts here in Brazil. But yeah, it could be a problem at the back. Danchi is a possible stand-in if David Luiz can't play. Apparently, David Luiz played most of the game with a broken nose. So it could be a problem at the back. And Brazil at times did look a bit shaky, it has to be said. Thiago Silva, who is one of the best defenders in the world, plays at PSG, has been pretty good. But at times, Brazil can be a little bit rocky at the back. They don't really have a leader figure. This has been pointed out a few times. There's no real Dunga in the Brazil side. So this can be a problem, especially when it comes to organising, especially when teams are attacking Brazil. Paulinho, as you mentioned, he had a good first game. Wasn't that brilliant against Mexico, but he did have an outstanding run. And he is officially what we call here a volante, which is a defensive midfielder. But he's been catching the eye, and his price tag, every time he plays for Brazil, he scores some fabulous goals. Even though he's a defensive midfielder, his price tag is certainly going up.
Mm. In the meantime, are you enjoying the new cheaper transport in Sao Paulo today, John?
Well, fortunately for me, I've been stuck at home, but I know it's affected a lot of people big time. You may have been aware that there's had a few demonstrations here in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, in Rio. Now, these are caused initially by a rise in a bus fare of around 20 centavos, which is about 5 pence. Each way, so this rise affected a lot of people. Now, this has been changed. Last night, the local governments in Rio and São Paulo said that they will not impose this rise. So we're back to what we were, being about 3 AIs each way, which is still relatively cheap, but depending on, you know, on your kind of status, but it can be quite expensive. Even though this initial target has been reached, this is the movement, the passive easing movement, the free access movement, this is what they wanted. They wanted to stop this rise. Even though this has been achieved, apparently there's still events planned for the next few days in over 90 cities. And there's talk of a general strike, perhaps on July the 1st. And places like São Paulo is twice the size of London. If you get a stoppage in one part of the city, it soon gets round to other areas. And I think on Monday evening, we had around 200 kilometres in total of congestion in the city. So, yeah, it can be a bit tricky getting around São Paulo.
Mm, at the best of times. But even this was something that began with a dispute over bus price, but it's awakened something much, much bigger. And a lot of talk now about the price tags, the economic burden that the World Cup, that the Olympics, and that the massive and endemic corruption that's rife there has placed on your average citizen. So it's likely that the protests are going to keep going.
It is indeed. And as you were saying, you know, it started ostensibly because of this price rise. It was a movement, passive avery, as I said before. They started with a relatively small amount of people last Thursday in São Paulo. Inside this group of people who were protesting were journalists and a lot of students. It turned ugly. The police fired tear gas at them, they used rubber bullets. And after that, perception changed about this group. It became a wider issue, and now things of quality of life issues, the security, the hospitals, or the lack of those kind of things here, violence and corruption, police violence, and the massive cost of the World Cup, they've all been included in this kind of a scenario. It's not necessarily, people aren't necessarily against the competition, but they believe that the money should have been spent elsewhere on transport, on hospitals, on education. But yeah, this movement is growing to something very, very big. And Monday evening here, as you may have seen the images, in all the major cities, people are on the streets protesting about the quality of life and a new Brazil, and saying that the giant has finally awoken, the giant, of course, being Brazil.
John Cottrell from Globo TV. Okay. Adam Hurry, a.k.a. Football Clichés, has noticed he's got a rather large bum. He has, actually. I know he's actually done. He says the world's largest football derriere, Sylvain Ebans Blake, John Hartson, and he's got Hulk in third place. I think Hulk for me is. Have you got somebody else?
Branislav Ivanovic.
He's got a big bum as well.
He's got a rump.
Yeah, he's got a rump. But there's something about Hulk. The amount that it protrudes. It's just
like
a
shell, isn't it? You see Ivanovic in profile, it's absolutely extraordinary. He looks like one of those centaurs.
I don't think you can beat Hulk in that regard.
Kenny Dalglish and Mark Hughes had really big bums that were good at holding defenders off. Now, right. Hulk's got
John
one.
John Barnes, I think, was quite gifted, wasn't
he?
Travis Sinclair.
Yeah.
Kolo Touré.
Jonathan Wilson says Mido. I don't remember. Did he have a particularly big bum? Or was he just arsed generally?
The recently retired Mido, we should say.
Oh, really?
He was just big all over, wasn't he, in the end?
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay. Mikael Jongsma comes in with a fellow whose name is spelled Zeefuik, which might be Zeefuik or Zeefuik or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's a Dutch thing. I mean, obviously, it's been big for a while. I'm sure we all noticed in the Champions League, but it's so big that it's remarkable. Every time you see it, you move to comment. Producer Ben has just interjected that he thinks that Neil Ruddock had to have specially made shorts, so big was
that's
he.
Yeah,
so much
true.
Junk did he pack in his trunk when he was Swindon's player manager. It's a story I'd never heard before.
Yeah, I think he had to get them when he played for Liverpool as well.
But
I think.
Was it a bum or just general waistline?
No, just general waistline.
Yeah, that's a different
the size,
thing.
The size of him, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure if you stuck Ruddock's bum on Hulk, though, it'd probably still look quite similar to how Hulk looks now.
Right. Good. Yeah. I don't think it would because, well, Hulk's got. That's the thing. It's not just big and flabby.
Do you think it's a big muscly bum then?
It's like, extraordinarily.
Yeah.
It's like a, I don't know, one of those geographical shelves.
At the
something.
Back of a Renault Megane.
Yeah, very similar. Andy Carroll. You excited, Jacob? A whole season of Andy Carroll.
A whole 6 years of Andy Carroll.
A whole 6 years?
Yeah.
6 years is
the
a long time.
Is you don't get a whole season of Andy Carroll. That's the issue with signing Andy Carroll.
No,
you get probably half a season. And,
about
and
20,
then he
20 games or so.
Yeah, and he's good in those games, but then in the other bit, he's just on the bench. Or he's
he won't be on the bench.
Well, coming back from injury. Yeah.
No. They'll sign another striker.
or on loan because they know that he won't be fit.
Yeah, that's it. You've just got to somehow try and keep him fit. He's last, I think the last season he had when he was fully fit was when he was in the Championship with Newcastle.
Right.
Every other season since that, he's been out for 2 or 3 months at, you know, at probably crucial times for those teams.
Right. Right. But that notwithstanding, you're excited about the fact that he's staying?
Yeah. Good player for them last season.
Great news. Yeah. Great news. Paris Saint-Germain, you got the front page of L'Equipe there, and indeed the rest of the paper as well. It says...
You should do the translation yourself, Jim.
Well, no, you can do it, Mr. Frenchman.
Go on. The Waltz of Nose.
Yep.
With pictures from left to right. Right. André Villas-Boas.
La Valse des Noms.
Mm-hmm. Oui. Rafa Benitez, Michael Laudrup, who's hitting, and the latest in to Waltz... Fabio Capello.
Right.
Yes.
And the
current
thing that
manager
links them
of the Russian national team.
Is that they all said non to non. PSG.
Yes.
Pourquoi?
One of the things which is really, really odd is that apparently all of these managers have been offered contracts which were only 1 year long. So you can imagine how it feels for a Hiddink, a Capello, or a Benitez, or a Laudrup, or a Villas-Boas. Say, well, okay, we want you as our manager, but we'll give you 1 year. Because basically we've got somebody else in mind.
So who do you think that person is?
In France, people keep talking about Arsène Wenger.
Right.
Which, I must say, I find quite hard to believe for many reasons. First of all, we know he's going to go to the end of his contract and there's talk of him extending at Arsenal beyond that. A second thing, if Arsène Wenger were to leave the model of Arsenal for the model of PSG, that would be the greatest stretch of any moral or ethical standpoint that I've ever witnessed, and I don't think that Wenger would ever be able to justify it. And I know that it might sound strange to say that, because they'll say, well, the money can convince him, or he might be taken in to change the nature of the project, but still, it's in complete contradiction with everything that he stands for.
Absolutely.
So... In the meantime, Paris Saint-Germain still have got Carlo Ancelotti as a manager.
Mm-hmm.
There's even talk of him being in charge of the first training session on the 1st of July, because he will still be under contract. So in Madrid, Florentino Perez is getting very, very edgy because he wants to introduce him to the press. The players in Paris, some of them are on most of them are on holidays now. Some of them are thinking, what on earth is going on? Some of them are starting to talk, saying it's a complete mess. Zlatan is known not to be too happy about the current situation. So, yes, we're less than 2 weeks away from the first training session for the new season. We still don't know who's going to manage Paris Saint-Germain.
So
it's an absolute shocking mess.
It's such an incoherent process they've gone through as well. Because you look at it on Monday or Tuesday and they're going for Villas-Boas, who, you know, how old is he, 35 or whatever, young manager at Tottenham. He rejects them. And the next thing you know, they're going for Fabio Capello, a 67-year-old Italian.
Not the
who's
most
managing
similar
an international.
And they might go back. And what they will probably do is go back to Villas-Boas. And maybe now they will change and say, well, we won't offer you 1 year. We'll offer you 3 years. And we'll offer you this and offer you that.
Do you think that's what will happen next? Or is there another man who's going to be approached?
There are some obvious choices if they do need somebody on the short term. Who would take on the job? Laurent Blanc certainly would agree to the job to take it for a year. For some reason, he's never been part of their plans. Roberto Mancini has been mentioned. Obviously, he's without a job, but the relationship between Mancini and Leonardo, as you will know, is not the best in the world. There's a possibility of having Claude Makélélé, perhaps, who is within the technical staff at the moment, taking over for a short period, whilst Leonardo, who has been suspended for 9 months, is basically not even on the bench, but outside of the stadium. And then when Leonardo comes back, Leonardo takes over. I mean, it's an extraordinary mess. And people don't know where to look. I mean, there are other names. Frank Rijkaard has been mentioned.
There you go.
Yeah.
So what's the Leonardo Mancini spat?
Well, because one was at Milan and one was at Inter, and I think they had some fairly nasty words.
Yeah, they don't like each other very much at all. I mean, Leonardo, one of the problems is that when you see him, and you've seen him on British television, he appears to be this really debonair, very handsome Brazilian.
But Tab Ramos would tell a different story, am I right?
Loads of people will tell loads of different stories about Leonardo, including Carlo Ancelotti. I think I've probably said that already on the podcast, but I'll say it again. It's a quote I love from an Italian journalist friend of mine who said, Leonardo is far more of a friend of Ancelotti's than Ancelotti is a friend of Leonardo's. Catty, eh?
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's suspended for 9 months because he barged into a referee after a game. Not very, very clever. His appeal is on the 3rd of July, so it might be that, he will be suspended for a lesser period of time. Doesn't look likely. I think it will be upheld. So PSG are basically giving the impression that they're, you know, the basic headless chicken running about.
What is that
in a very expensive farmyard?
What is a headless chicken in French?
Un poulet sans tête.
Oui?
Oui.
Okay. It's interesting. I like foreign idioms. Jack Lang, who I think is going to be joining us on Saturday, has been tweeting...
The former French culture minister.
Yeah. You wondered what he was up to now. Here's your answer. He was tweeting one or two Brazilian football ones. I enjoyed the Pé de Alface, which is a lettuce foot for a striker with a very weak shot. I quite like that. Mm. And of course, there was always that the chocolate leg one that we used to hear about Robin van Persie.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Good. Do you know what... hairdresser is in French.
What?
In football terms.
Oh, no, I don't.
A coiffeur.
Yeah.
It's a player who is part of a squad, never plays in it.
And why is he called the hairdresser?
Because I suppose all he's got time to do, all he's doing in the team is just looking after the quiffs of his teammates.
It's interesting, though, isn't it?
Something like that. Les coiffeurs.
Right. Good. Lovely. I like that.
Unless you're a PSG fan, of course, not lovely at all.
No, that's true. That's true. Now... While last year they had the league pretty much to themselves, our friends in Paris, this year they've got the looming shadow of the Monégasques.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, how real a prospect are they with all the money they're throwing around? What's the total they've spent so far? About 150 million?
Something like that. We'll go well over the 200 million.
Wow.
I think it will probably be a new world record.
Wow.
In terms of money, certainly in terms of net spend, because there's not a single of the players that was with Monaco last year that can be sold for any more than a couple of million quid.
See,
maybe.
I know it's wrong and it's not football, but I'm actually really excited
are
by
you?
This. Yeah,
okay. You know,
a club coming in and just building a team out of nothing.
They're now on to Etienne Capoue. I think that might be of interest to people because he's been linked to a number of English clubs, Everton, Arsenal and so forth. And
right.
Apparently Monaco are on to Etienne Capoue
for the
about 15 million euros.
Who are the headlines so far for them?
Well, João Moutinho, Radamel Falcao,
right.
James Rodriguez,
yes.
Ricardo Carvalho, Issima Mirin, the young French defender, was really excellent. Which isn't bad for starters.
It isn't.
And it will carry on because basically they need a completely new team.
Well, who are they going to go for? You mentioned one guy. Any other?
Well, there was mention of Yohan Cabaye as well.
Kebab, I think.
Yohan Kebab, sorry.
Sorry, please.
I do apologize. Etienne Canoe or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, and they have still, I'm sure, you know, perhaps they will go for Edinson Cavani now. No, it doesn't seem going to happen.
Who's doing the scouting for them? Just somebody on Google putting in really expensive footballers and then a list comes up and they just put bids in for them.
I think it goes this way. Is, Dimitri Ribolov left. Guys pick up the phone and go, Georges? And Georges says, well, I've got this player and this player and this player and this player. It will only cost you 30 million. Ah, it's all right.
I find it quite fabulous. But I know I shouldn't. But are they going to mount a proper challenge this year or is it going to be kind of crash mess?
If you look at the players they've got so far, what it reminds me of is what happened with the Racing Paris-Matra. Do you remember? When they spent all this money on people like Lidbarski, Luis Fernandez, Enzo Francescoli, and so forth, the big players at the time. And the club was a completely artificial construct by Monsieur Lagardère, the late Monsieur Lagardère. And what's happening is a bit the same thing. It's an artificial construct, put an artificial construct, because Monaco is artificial by nature. You know what the attendances are. You know, it's 4,000 to 5,000. Their biggest crowd of the year is always when they play Nice, or when they played Nice, when they were in the same division. And when you would have 10,000 supporters, probably 8,000 of them supporting OGC Nice. So it's a tiny, rickety stadium.
Mm. The Nice derby's back on, though, this year, though.
Yeah, that should be interesting. That should be fun. Provided, of course, Monaco is part of Ligue 1. Because, as you know, there are still issues to be resolved.
Okay.
It's still going on. It's nonsense.
I thought for this year they were okay, and then it's the next year that's the question. But you would obviously know.
No, I mean, the thing is that I know and I don't. I mean, the whole thing is in a state of flux at the moment. It's they're looking at each other in the eyes, the French League and Monaco. There's lawyers acting everywhere.
What's the worst that could happen, that Monaco don't... That they have to stay in Ligue 2?
Well,
is it Ligue 2?
The thing is that... Ligue 2, yes. They're going to have to solve this problem of the league insisting that they are based, their headquarters are based in France.
I bet the Italians would have them.
Would you?
I think they to Serie A. Serie A would snap Monaco up
Within the status of Serie A to elect an additional member?
But yeah, they've done weirder stuff than that.
Okay, that's true.
Yeah.
No, but that will be a compromise at some
they've
point.
They've got
obviously,
a healthy
and they will play in
Liga, technically
but
as well.
Will they, you know, present a real challenge? Yes, they will. I mean, given the players that they've recruited, they haven't got a bad manager at all, Claudio Ranieri.
Yeah.
So,
he hung on to his job. It's remarkable, isn't it?
Extraordinary. Extraordinary. Yes, it did. And there will be more players coming, and it will be a brand new 11.
And Ligue 1 kind of needs them, doesn't it? Because you've got this top-heavy kind of Paris Saint-Germain that didn't play particularly well, but just had such an incredible squad that they bossed everybody else in the end.
Well,
you need two bullies, basically.
That's why we're presenting it. If you have a situation where you just have two clubs fighting it out, slugging it out, it's also a bit boring, isn't it?
Well, it is, but it's better than one club.
True. But one of the reasons why a number of clubs in France are really, really upset about what Monaco is doing is that, remember, we've only got two clubs who are qualified directly for the group phase of the Champions League.
Ah.
And that the third one has to go through the preliminary round and then the playoffs to access the group stage, so, which is not that easy.
Mm.
So it's a huge source of revenue for a football that is, you know, very low on resources at the moment, apart from PSG. And for clubs like OM and Lyon, when you see that club arriving, suddenly becoming a major candidate, a favourite, a sudden favourite for a place in the Champions League, thinking, we're in trouble here.
I'd like to see what trick Monaco are going to use to get past financial fair play, though.
That's going to be all the more interesting, as before they actually started to spend all that money, their wages to turnover ratio was already 150%, which is in the second division.
Wow.
So how they justify that to the account, well, you know, the watchdog, the French watchdog, is already a mystery.
Yeah.
How they will justify that to the hounds, which have been unleashed by Michel Platini, is another one.
Right. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing back from those hounds, because they're due to report in a month or two, are they not? The Droit and Touche are going to
get... Droit and Touche, yes.
Yeah. Mm. Cool. Well, you know what? That was fascinating. It's not left us a huge amount of time for in-depth analysis of Uruguay, Nigeria. What's your gut feeling on this, Craig?
I think Uruguay will win.
Why?
Because they've got better players than Nigeria.
Even Tahiti scored against Nigeria.
That's true.
Yeah. So you could Cavani, he's going to...
I imagine Cavani, he'll score one, won't he? Mm. Yeah.
Nigeria arrived just 24 hours before the tournament, didn't they?
They did. So
their preparations were a model of...
A
model of preparation.
They had that payment dispute, didn't they, as well?
They did.
But, I mean, this is not it's not the Uruguayan side that, you know, won the Copa America. I mean, it looks mediocre in comparison. Mm. And, you know, you look at their results in their qualifying group. They lost to Colombia. They drew against Ecuador. They lost to Chile. They've had some very, very poor results, really.
Whereas Nigeria are unbeaten in 19 games. But I'm with you on this, Craig. I look through the squad. It does look impressive. And Suarez. Mm-hmm. Suarez.
And I don't know what his record is now for Uruguay. He scored...
It's 11 in his last 14 matches for Uruguay.
It's a fantastic record for them. Mm. And he's just such a handful.
He's now level with Forlan as Uruguay's all-time top scorer.
Mm.
Crikey.
They've got a creaky defence, though. I mean, some of them showing their age. Diego Lugano, certainly, is showing his age, and they don't look very solid. I would put Nigeria, personally.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Well, it's a playoff for the semi-final. That, Jacob, what's your feeling? Is it? Good. The other game coming up from I'm going to call it Group B, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Group B is the big one. Spain against Tahiti. Maghrebin posting in on this. I'd asked whether the alphabet in Tahiti was known as the Alphaet, because the letter B doesn't exist. He says, well, to flog a dead horse, the alphabet in Tahiti would just be called the Alpha. No? I have to say he's right on that.
That's very good.
That's sharp. Monctonian says he's been looking at Oceania qualifying because he was curious as to how Tahiti could be in the Confederations Cup. You know that they came through as the winner of the Nations Cup, which doubles as part of the World Cup qualifying process. Stop me if I'm boring here, but Tahiti won it and New Zealand lost their semi-final, and then the four semi-finalists then go into the next round of World Cup qualifiers, six games home and away, and New Zealand have been absolutely brilliant in that. They're top in the group. Tahiti, not even second. They had just 3 points, losing five of their six games. So I'm not sure what happened at that Nations Cup, nor is Monctonian, but you know, delightful to see them there and that. And how many goals is Spain going to put past them, Jake?
I don't know, Spain don't really like scoring, do they? So maybe it would just be 1-0.
That's the old Spain you think you have nowadays. They play with a centre-forward and that.
Two, then.
Two goals.
Yeah. They'll go crazy.
Greg?
Well, I think they might get up to five. Maybe they'll get up to six.
Oh, come on.
No, and then they'll just, you know, take the foot off the accelerator and feel a little bit sorry for them and pass it around a bit and think, oh, we don't want to disrespect them, you know.
Thing is, did you see Spain-Ireland in Euro 2012?
Mm-hmm.
When it was kind of 150% possession for Spain. How many goals did they score that day?
Four.
Right, okay.
So are you comparing Ireland to Tahiti?
No, I'm just thinking of a game in which Spain were, effectively were... A,
yeah, no. It's not Robbie Keane, it's Roy Keane.
Oh, yeah.
Oof,
yeah.
Sorry.
Why?
Because there's no B in Tahitian.
Okay, yeah.
By the way, just seeing that, the courtesy of L'Equipe, of course. The record goal, record victory, largest victory, Spain... An international game was 13-0 in 1933 in a friendly against Bulgaria.
Right, okay.
But we're saying, showing respect, I mean, if you don't score willingly, isn't that showing the ultimate disrespect?
It's patronising, isn't it?
It's really patronising.
And yet, there is that feeling quite often when teams get to a certain figure that they don't want to rub the other teams' noses.
Yeah, Spain against Italy, wasn't there the thing at the end of the Euros where... There was a whole thing about, you know, showing Italy respect. And, I don't know, I've just got a feeling Spain might just, you know, just sit off a little bit.
It's the so-called B team, by the way, of Spain, which is still pretty impressive. Valdés, Azpilicueta, Albiol, Ramos, Monreal, Javi Martinez, Silva, Mata, Cazorla, Villa, Torres.
I wonder what they call the B team in Tahiti.
Tahiti.
I guess they do. Yeah. Should mention... talking of four goals in Spain and that of course Spain, since we last spoke, have also taken on Italy in the final of the European Championship under 21 category, and lo and behold, it was exactly the same as the final of...
Not quite the same.
Well, hang on, what was it last summer then?
4-0.
And this was 4-1.
4-2, wasn't it?
4-2.
Did they get a second, Italy?
Yes, they did. It was Fabio Borini got the second.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good for him. Good for him.
Come on, Barry.
Greg celebrates.
Yes.
Magnificent. All right, so Spain, so they now got the under-21s.
Thiago hat-trick as well.
I mean, Thiago got the hat-trick and...
Might be going to Man United.
Yeah, everyone's all over him. But Spain now own what? They own the under-21s, World Cup, Euros. They got something else the other day, didn't they? They're going for the under-20s soon.
Yeah, for the under-20s, yeah.
They've got the Beach Football World Cup coming up in Tahiti.
They've got the French Open.
The French Open, yeah. Yeah. It's extraordinary. What they've never won, though, you know what they've never won?
Carling Cup.
The Confederations Cup, Jacob, although technically you are right. Yeah. The Confederations Cup. But my word, who'd bet against them doing it this time? And on that note, we'll let everybody get on with their lives and sign off for this Confederations Cup Football Daily. We'll be back Friday morning. So, goodbye, Producer Ben. Goodbye, Jacob Steinberg. Goodbye, Greg Bukowski. Goodbye, Philippe Auclair. And bye from me. Cheers, listeners. Speak to you Friday.
CCFD with AC Jimbo. Worth.